You're listening to the CyberWire Network, powered by N2K.
Hey, everybody. Today, I want to highlight a name that all of us know well, and that is our sponsor, Splunk. You need to keep operations humming around the clock, but potential disruptions are everywhere. Splunk helps you predict problems and find and fix issues fast so you can reduce risk and ditch downtime. The world's largest enterprises rely on Splunk's unified security and observability platform to become more efficient, resilient, and innovative. With Splunk, you can react quickly, evolve faster, and be ready for anything. Stay ahead of disruptions. Learn more at splunk.com/resilience. And we thank Splunk for sponsoring our show. In the complex world of enterprise identity, securing legacy web apps at scale can be daunting. Strata Identity makes it simple. With Strata, you can effortlessly integrate non-standard apps with any identity service, like MFA or SSO, with zero coding and zero hassle. Designed by identity architects for identity architects, Strata works with every vendor, standard, and app architecture. This means your apps can now speak modern protocols and integrate seamlessly with your chosen identity services. From securing on-prem web apps to migrating away from outdated identity providers or consolidating them, Strata helps you keep your complex access policies as you modernize your identity infrastructure and get rid of technical debt. Join leading organizations like 3M, Dallas County, and CIBC in securing your apps with Strata. Visit strata.io/cyberwire, share your identity security priorities, and receive a complimentary pair of AirPods Pro. Offer valid for organizations with over 5,000 employees. Connect today at strata.io/cyberwire. Dragos publicly releases its full report on ECANS ransomware, the first known ransomware with a real, if primitive, capability against industrial control systems. An Australian logistics company struggles with an unspecified malware infestation. Coronavirus fake news is used as fish bait. Election security may get an early test in Iowa. The Department of Defense issues new cybersecurity rules for contractors. And two cases of insider threats, or alleged insider threats. From the CyberWire studios at DataTribe, I'm Dave Bittner with your CyberWire summary for Monday, February 3rd, 2020. Industrial cybersecurity company Dragos this morning publicly released its full report on the ECANS ransomware that has recently afflicted industrial control systems. ECANS is referred to as SNAKE in some sources, ECANS being SNAKE spelled backwards. ECANS was interesting because it was, as Dragos explains, a relatively straightforward ransomware strain. It encrypted files on infected machines and displayed a ransom message. The difference, however, was interesting. Beyond doing these things, ECANS also, quote, featured additional functionality to forcibly stop a number of processes, including multiple items related to ICS operations, end quote. That is, it included a mechanism that hit processes in a static kill list. It is, as Dragos explains, a relatively primitive attack mechanism, but this is something new with ransomware. ECANS, at least, intentionally targets industrial systems. The malware has been active, it is believed, since about the middle of December. Dragos, which as a matter of policy studiously avoids attribution, in this case does offer some grounds for skepticism of early reports in January from other observers and researchers that linked ECANS with Iran. Dragos finds that linkage tenuous at best and sees few, if any, of the markers that some had believed indicated the hidden hand of Tehran at work. Australia's Toll Group, a logistics company that operates a fleet of 7 cargo ships, has shut down some systems while it investigates and recovers from a suspected cyber attack, according to industry publication Splash 24/7. What kind of attack Toll Group may have sustained is unknown, and the company has said little beyond saying that it's reverted to manual operations in place of some systems it shut down out of caution. The company says it's working with experts to bring its systems back online. It appears, according to Business Insider, that the affected systems are customer-facing business systems, and in particular those systems customers could use to track shipments. This judgment is based mostly on public customer complaints, and the customers seem to be growing increasingly salty, as manual backups appear to have been unequal to the task of providing a minimally acceptable alternative to the automated systems that have been temporarily closed pending remediation. Toll's systems display a message when customers inquire about their stuff. Something went wrong with the connection. We're sorry. The site is taking too long to respond. This should be a short-term issue. Once more is known, perhaps the incident might serve as an object lesson in preparing manual backup and readying a strong corporate communications plan as part of planning for resilience. As usually happens with any news story that achieves widespread circulation and considerable penetration into popular consciousness, the coronavirus epidemic continues to be used as fishbait to spread malware. Tech Republic, citing research by both Kaspersky and IBM's X-Force, reports that emails circulating in Japan and purporting to be from a disability welfare service provider are serving as an infection vector. The inducement to open a malicious Word document attached to the email is the false report that the virus has broken out in three Japanese prefectures. It hasn't, of course, but if you're frightened into opening the attached file, you'll be likely to come down with a case of the Emotet Trojan. The Iowa caucuses represent the first round in the U.S. presidential primaries, and they meet today. As is usually the case, the party that doesn't hold the White House is the interesting one to watch, and of course this year that would be the Democrats. Although, as Politico notes, caucus voting is lower tech than it will be in other contests, Iowa affords the first look at how 2020's vote will proceed in the face of expected cyber disruption. Watch for reports of influence operations designed to disrupt the caucuses. Watch also for the less likely but still possible attempt by foreign state actors, and we're looking at you, Russia, as usual, to directly manipulate the vote counting. The state of West Virginia intends to make casting a ballot by smartphone an option for disabled voters this year, NBC News reports. One hopes the gain in accessibility will outweigh the risk of cyber attack and that proper safeguards will be put in place. Mondak says that the city of Chicago's lawsuit against Marriott over the hotel chain's 2018 data breach has survived a motion to dismiss. The lawsuit is a consumer protection action alleging negligence in securing customer data. The long-anticipated cybersecurity rules the U.S. Defense Department wants the defense industrial base to live by reach their final form at the end of January. CMMC model version 1.0 will be phased in over the summer of 2020. The Defense Department is open to receiving comments on the rules, as NextGov reports, but in outline, the new guidelines establish a five-level system that grows more stringent with the sensitivity of the work a company performs. Previously, contractors had been required to attest that they adhered to practices recommended by NIST. The new rules will require certification by paid, accredited third-party assessors. It's expected to take 6 months to a year to be ready, so if you're the sort to be interested in U.S. federal contractor inside baseball, now would be the time to start getting familiar with CMMC model version 1.0. Finally, two cases show the varied forms that insider threats can assume. These two cases are interesting in that they involve trusted insiders, and they allege that these insiders knew what they were about. They weren't, in the government's view, instances of well-intentioned error, but rather, allegedly, cases in which people had some things to hide and now have some explaining to do. Quartz reports that a Raytheon missile systems engineer, Wei Sun, has been arrested for taking a company-issued laptop containing classified information with him on a trip to China. He's being charged with violating federal export control laws. Apparently, Raytheon's security staff found the problem and reported Mr. Sun to the authorities. Charles Lieber, professor and chair of Harvard's Chemistry and Chemical Biology Department, has been charged with a single felony count for making false statements to U.S. government agencies. The charge is related to his failure to disclose that he was working for China's Thousand Talents program, receiving $1.5 million from Wuhan University of Technology, while he simultaneously received U.S. federal research grants. He faces up to 5 years in prison, 3 years of supervised release, and a $250,000 fine. The Wall Street Journal observes that it's not illegal to receive foreign grants, but that any such relationships must be disclosed when applying for support from U.S. agencies. A specialist in nanotechnology, Professor Lieber had received millions in grants from the U.S. Department of Defense and the National Institutes of Health. And joining me once again is Joe Kerrigan. He's from the Johns Hopkins University Information Security Institute, also my co-host over on the Hacking Humans podcast. Joe, great to have you back.
Hi, Dave.
I spoke with Ben Yellen over on our Caveat podcast about this new bill that is going through the Maryland legislature about ransomware.
Maryland Senate Bill 30.
And I wanted to get your take on it because, I don't know, I think I was a little counter to Ben on his reaction to it, and I suspect you and I probably align. But before we dig in, can you just give us a quick overview? What's Maryland up to here?
Well, what they're doing is they are defining what ransomware is in this law.
Mm-hmm.
Then they're making it illegal to, quote, knowingly possess ransomware with the intent to use the ransomware for the purpose of introduction into the computer.
Okay.
Okay. And then directly above that, the paragraph says, this paragraph does not apply to the use of ransomware for research purposes.
And they're making this a misdemeanor with up to 10 years of imprisonment and a fine of up to $10,000.
That's correct. That's the third change that they've made. They've made three changes to this law. One is they define what ransomware is. Two, they make possession of it with the intent to use it a crime. And three, they specify what the penalties are. Maryland law is actually very easy to read.
comparatively.
So.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
So there's a lot of hype about this law that I've seen in the press recently, in the security press. People should be aware of a few things. Everything that is not related to ransomware in this law is already on the books in Maryland. This bill repeals and replaces that existing law with the new law that includes the ransomware language.
So we're just being a little more specific about ransomware.
We're broadening the scope of the law.
And I suppose it's fair to say that as a bit of background, of course, Baltimore got pummeled by ransomware recently or in the past year or so.
Yeah.
Cost them over $18 million.
Yes, it was a bad situation. And that was not the first time that it happened.
Yeah.
They had also had their 911 system attacked by ransomware.
Yeah.
And there was a ransomware incident in Salisbury, I believe. Well, I'm going from memory on that.
When Ben Yellen and I were talking about this, Ben made the point that that he thought this was good for deterrence. I was a little more skeptical about that.
Yeah,
Where do you come down?
I'm very skeptical about that. I don't think this will deter anybody from possessing ransomware. Number one, Maryland is, you know, how are you going to prosecute under Maryland law somebody in a different country?
Right.
Are you going to ask them to be extradited to Maryland where you can prosecute them?
Mm-hmm.
Also, with the fact that this research exclusion is written very broadly, it says this paragraph does not apply to the use of ransomware for research purposes.
Mm-hmm.
So if I have ransomware, even if I have intent to distribute it, and I get busted because I live in Maryland, and I say, hey, I'm just researching it.
Yeah.
And how does that
get out of jail free card?
Yeah, how does that not a get out of jail free card?
Yeah, I mean, I guess you'd have to convince the judge.
Right.
Certainly the arguments would be made, but you're correct. It is kind of broad.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, my take on this is that this is a response by our legislators that Baltimore got hit hard.
Right.
And it's good for them to make a public display that we take this seriously. We're doing something about this. Look, we're taking action.
Yeah. Yeah. And this really doesn't, in my opinion, this doesn't take very much action at all.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't offer any greater security. It does provide a penalty for something. And maybe Ben's right that that is some kind of disincentive. I don't know how much of a disincentive it is. I don't know how many ransomware attacks originate from Maryland.
Right.
I suspect it's very low.
Mm-hmm.
There is another bill that expands the scope of the Secretary of IT to include advising and consulting on cybersecurity matters. I think that is a better bill.
Hmm.
It does move the state in a more secure direction.
Yeah. Well, I suppose it's good that there's recognition at the state level that these sorts of things require action. Of course,
I will say I'm glad to see that the Maryland legislature is starting to look at cybersecurity as an issue that needs to be addressed.
Yeah, I guess an $18 million bill from Baltimore will get your attention when it comes to these kinds of things, right? Right.
I wonder what it costs Salisbury, too. I haven't found any reporting on that yet.
Yeah, yeah. All right. Well, interesting development. Joe Kerrigan, thanks for joining us.
It's my pleasure.
Managing the requirements for modern security programs is increasingly challenging and time-consuming. Enter Vanta. Vanta gives you one place to centralize and scale your security program. Quickly assess risk, streamline security reviews, and automate compliance for ISO 27001, SOC 2, and more. You can leverage Vanta's market-leading trust management platform to unify risk management and secure the trust of your customers. Plus, use Vanta AI to save time when completing security questionnaires. CyberWire daily listeners can get $1,000 off by going to vanta.com/cyber. That's vanta.com/cyber.
And that's the CyberWire. For links to all of today's stories, check out our daily briefing at thecyberwire.com. And for professionals and cybersecurity leaders who want to stay abreast of this rapidly evolving field, sign up for CyberWire Pro. It'll save you time and keep you informed. Listen for us on your Alexa smart speaker, too. The CyberWire podcast is proudly produced in Maryland out of the startup studios of Data Tribe, where they're co-building the next generation of cybersecurity teams and technologies. Our amazing CyberWire team is Elliot Peltzman, Peru Prakash, Stefan Vaziri, Kelsey Bond, Tim Nodar, Joe Kerrigan, Carol Terrio, Ben Yellen, Nick Vilecki, Gina Johnson, Bennett Moe, Chris Russell, John Petrick, Jennifer Iben, Rick Howard, Peter Kilpie, and I'm Dave Bittner. Thanks for listening. We'll see you back here tomorrow.